real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I want to jump right in. John Najarian is on a phone line, and this is one of those days when I need to depend on him for his expertise. John, you see him on CNBC, the Halftime Report, and also from the Najarian Family Office. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Well, always great, Stephen. Thank you. Let's dive into it.
Okay, we're diving because we heard Orion say, word is that the administration is going to announce $12 billion in aid for farmers to offset the money that they're losing for the tariffs. I saw one statistic that 9 of the top 10 soybean states went for Donald Trump, so obviously these are his voters, and that hurts them. I don't know if that's right, because I think Minnesota should be in there somewhere. At any rate, so the idea is, to me, this money is going to help keep their heads afloat, and yet the reaction on Wall Street is that Deere and other farm machinery stocks go up. I mean, so is this money they will, is this going to be like extra spending money for them, or is this money they need to get by? You get my question? Why does Deere going up?
I do, and I think it's because the tariffs may have had the effect, at least the way a lot of us on Wall Street are looking at it, that the purchases of some of those items were put off.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, the fact that they might be getting a little bit of a handout from the government because of something the government did in the first place, and that is those tariffs, and the reaction from the Chinese in particular against us and the farmers, maybe those monies will still be spent, maybe not in as large a quantity, but still be spent, and that's why you're seeing those rallies in Deere and AGCO and some of the other tractor-related names.
So rather than being a new stimulus and boost, it's really maybe a return to the equilibrium before the tariffs kicked in?
Yes, sir. That's my belief.
All right, big news from Alphabet, right? Orion again said that's what's sort of driving the market today. We're going to hear from Google, I think, after the market today. But tell me about Alphabet and what's happening on Wall Street this afternoon.
Well, we've got Facebook tomorrow and Amazon tomorrow. And like you say, those numbers out of Google were pretty spectacular, or Alphabet, pretty spectacular. And that market cap now moving through $850 billion. Question is, of course, when Amazon reports, are they actually going to perhaps be the first U.S. company to top $1 trillion? Because their market cap is just shy of $900 billion right now. And not that $100 billion is easy to get, but depending what kind of numbers they could put out, you could see a surge in there.
Yeah.
Although I imagine it'll be a little more muted because this won't include their just concluded Prime Day.
What'd you buy in Prime Day, John?
Oh, you know, I bought boring stuff like... not really anything of note, mainly some new sneakers and things like that that I just, you know, knew that they'd be on sale, and sure enough, they were.
Yeah, I don't know if I misspoke when I said that Amazon, I might have said at the end of the day, but it's tomorrow. Look, I'm just seeing a headline from the Wall Street Journal that Ivanka Trump is shutting down her fashion brand. I don't know that that's...
Yeah, I just saw that. She's just telling the White House staff, I guess, that... Because her stint at the White House is taking up more of her time, that she's going to focus on that rather than trying to keep that brand going. And that's the only headline that I've seen so far,
yeah.
So I can't comment on it much more than that. Not publicly traded either.
Right, exactly. And you know what? I think that's probably a good thing because she's run into trouble with the branding and working in public service and all of that. So she can set that aside and get back to it after their days in the White House are over, probably.
Sure, if she's got a passion for it.
Earnings reports for this session are what, about a quarter through, and 91% of companies have topped earnings expectations, so it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, and they're getting tougher and tougher comps, too. I mean, it's not easy to beat over and over again because, again, it's easier to beat when you had a weak quarter a year ago. But when you've had good quarters year over year, to beat it and beat it as much as many of these have beaten by, that's saying a lot about the strength of the economy. And I think, like you say, it's over 90%. That's a big number.
Yeah, that's a great point. They're reporting good numbers after good numbers before. You know, I just went to Norway earlier this year, and I like to follow what's going on with Tesla. I was reading this article. You know, half of all new cars purchased in Norway are electric cars. It's just phenomenal, their commitment to renewable energy and alternative sort of forms of energy. And Tesla had been doing well there, but it's now the least favorite car brand because they can't get repair parts. There was a guy who was in a fender bender, thought it'd be a couple of weeks to get it repaired, and his car's been in the shop for 5 months. I just bring it up to show that it's another sort of sign of the growing pains that Elon Musk and Tesla is feeling around the world.
Yeah, and their bonds are still trading down, which means the yields are up. That's good if you're buying them here and betting on Tesla. But if you bought them when those 5.3% notes came out, you're not so happy when they go to 89 cents on the dollar, which means that the yield is more like 7.2%. So, yeah, there's a lot of people shooting at Mr. Musk right now, and he hasn't helped himself lately with either those tweets or with the way he's handled some of his press conferences. But I still like him.
All right, help me make some money. What are you watching today?
All right. Let's see. We were trading a lot of general growth, GGP. General growth had a big surge in volumes today, and we jumped on that one. It's, of course, a mall REIT. General growth, that's what they do, a real estate investment trust, when I say REIT. So we bought that. I feel comfortable with it, and I like this company. It's in the S&P 500.
John Najarian, thanks very much for joining us today. We'll talk next week.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is now 12:23 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ramon Castillon is on a phone line. He's the president of Row House. Ramon, every day after work, I go to my health club, and I never row. But after reading about all the benefits of it today, I think I'm going to give it a shot today. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate you carving out the time.
Tell me about Row House, and it looks like big expansion is on the way.
Yeah, we've been selling territories now for a handful of months, and we're up to 47. We actually have our discovery day over the next 2 days, so that number will grow. Row House is a boutique fitness concept that focuses on bringing rowing to the masses. Our overall programming focuses on teaching exactly what you said, is those individuals that have looked at a rower and wondering what the benefit of that is, and teaching them how to row so that they get their bang for their buck. It's probably one of the best pieces of equipment that someone can use. It's extremely effective in terms of helping you burn calories, but it actually works out your entire body as well. So unlike a spin bike or a treadmill, which tends to focus more on your lower body, you actually engage 85% of your entire body when you're using a rower. And so our overall goal is to have you come in, take class, experience rowing, really get in tune with the culture. The rowing culture is something that's absolutely amazing, extremely unique. It's built off of camaraderie, people of individual strengths coming together and really working together to be able to propel the boat through water. So we try to recreate that experience in the studio every day.
Looking at your website, it looks like the classes are sort of spin classes, but they're on rowing machines.
Yeah, about 60% of the programming is on the rower. We do also complement that with some time on the floor,
right,
to provide different emphasis, strength training, stretching, high energy classes to really get your heart rate up. So it's a lot of rowing, but a lot of extra stuff as well.
Okay, so 47 franchisees have been announced, and 10 are coming to, is it Illinois or Chicago? In the Illinois, I guess, within the next, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, that is correct. We have North Chicago, so Lakeview, Lincoln Park, Wicker Park, West Loop. We have also Suburban Market, so you have Oak Park. You have Northbrook, Deerfield, Highland Park. So it's Row House is going to be in a lot of places with Chicago.
Okay. You're going to open one in Deerfield. Great. That's where I live. So I'll check that out. If I wanted to open up a franchise, what's it going to cost me?
The range of the cost, which is in our FDD, is between $230,000 and $350,000. It really depends on the site you select, the market, a lot of different variables that can kind of drive that range.
I'm interested in what comes with that. We haven't really talked too much about franchising on this show. So if I were to franchise with you and I put that money out, what how do we work together to make a successful business?
So it's what you get with that is a state-of-the-art studio, really amazing lobby when you walk in, really drives a very kind of high energy, high quality experience. And then the workout floor, it's its own kind of separate experience with an amazing AV experience, TV screen showing data, the rowers, the weight equipment. You know, what comes also is our support as a franchisee. So we're very, very hands-on in helping you execute every part of your business so that every step of the way, you know, you're doing all the right stuff so that you're teed up for success. So we're the type of franchisor that doesn't necessarily want to nickel and dime our partners. You know, once you're in the family, we're here to support you.
Ramon Castillon. So yep, you're the president of Row House. We got to run, but when do you expect the, it's Row House, R-O-W House. When do you expect the shops to start opening around Illinois?
End of this year, beginning of next.
Excellent, Ramon. Good.
Out of the range, yeah.
I'll see you in Deerfield. Thanks very much. It's good to talk to you.
All right, thanks a lot, Steve.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right, thanks very much, Ryan Burroughs. Steve Bertrand here on the Biz Lunch. Thanks for tuning in. On a phone line is Steve Levine, who is a writer for Axios. And Steve's been on the program before. Steve, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve.
I want to start with, well, you had written a couple of stories about the tariffs and soybean farmers and all that, and even a little animation that comes out of China I want to ask you about. But here we're hearing that the president is going to announce, I think, $12 billion in emergency aid for the farmers. Jonathan Swan, your partner at Axios, says that this is an idea that the Republican leadership hates. So I'm just wondering what you make of it and what your first reaction to this news is.
Well, I think on both sides, meaning on the Chinese side and on the U.S. side, there's going to be an attempt to blunt the strategy of the other country. So China is expected, in order to blunt U.S. tariffs, to eliminate the VAT. VAT tax, so that its products, so Chinese products, won't be as expensive with exports. And here on the U.S. side, you're seeing Trump doing an equivalent thing, not giving tax relief, but a direct bailout.
Right.
It's more of brinksmanship. It's more of gamesmanship.
All right, let's talk about what brought you to the table here, because you wrote this piece about our aging population, which really had my eyes opened. Tell me about the term peak human and what it means for us.
Well, the big story, let me start here. The big story is that outside of Africa, as we head further into this century, we are growing older as countries, and we are becoming childless. So we have all the United States, much of Europe, really the whole developing world. Our population replacement rate has dropped below 2.1, and that means 2.1 children per family. That means we're shrinking, and at the same time, we're becoming healthier. We're growing. We're living longer, and that means that as we head toward the end of the century, more than a third of the population in developing countries is going to be over 65 years old. We're going to be old countries. So this means that we won't have as many workers to produce things to keep our economies going. We're also not having enough working people, the working age people, to support the elderly population. And then specifically, I'll close out here, peak human. Peak human means the other thing that's happening is that for a number of reasons, our population is heading for a peak for the first time in human history, right? So our narrative from the time we were in caves has been, how do we support more people? How do we keep the tribe in the next village from coming over and encroaching on our land? For the first time, in the latter part of this century, it looks like we're going to peak. And so the narrative will be, how do we support ourselves in a shrinking world?
And, we always talk about Japan and how about Japan is aging and shrinking population. But they're actually, I think, number 11 when it comes to the countries in losing population. The leaders, I guess, I don't know if leaders is the right term, but are all in Eastern Europe. So there's that. Okay, Steve, tell me about, though, when I was growing up in biology class and environmental studies and all of that, they talked about the danger of the population growth and how there were going to be too many humans for this planet. So why is it that reaching peak human is a bad thing? I guess you sort of explained it a little bit, but tell me a little bit more.
Well, so you're right. On the positive side, so we shouldn't see this only as doom and gloom. First, on the positive side, it means that the amount of resources we have, and that's agriculture, and energy, you know, metals, all kinds of things get shared among fewer people, gradually fewer people. That's a good thing, right? So you know, we can figure out how we're going to share that out and live a better life. The problem happens with the other factors that are coming in. It's the aging, and the fewer children. So it's not that we are that we're peaking at the same proportion, the same age proportions. And so how are we going to support ourselves as societies as we shrink?
In Eastern Europe, I should say, a lot of those governments are led by anti-immigration regimes, and in many ways that might be leading to their decline in population. You say that, and we've got only about 30 seconds here, Steve, but you say that immigration might be a solution to some of this, but it'll be difficult for people to take. So explain for me how immigration works here.
Right. So it's two solutions. One is robots, and the other is migrants. The reason it's the answer is not robots. Robots don't pay taxes. So migrants will.
That'd be a hell of a robot if you could build one to pay taxes too.
Yeah. And so the countries that have shrinking populations will have to welcome migrants from places. It's largely Africa. To keep their population young, to mean that they're going to have a sufficient working age population.
Steve Levine is the future editor at Axios. Great to talk to you again, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Pop quiz, name one of Chicago's largest commercial real estate firms. Nah, time's up. How about Cushman & Wakefield? They're making waves this week after they announced their plan to raise $810 million for their IPO. They're offering 45 million shares between $16 and $18 apiece. The 45,000-person company is doing this to pay down some of their $3 billion in debt, but these days, nothing is as simple and as easy as it used to be. So keep an eye peeled to see how this develops. And oh my gosh, they're here. Guys, they're finally here. Electric scooters have finally made their way to Chicago. No, this isn't a flashback to the 90s. This is serious. Lime is a California-based dockless bike and electric scooter company that has started to roll out electric scooters at festivals this past weekend. And you can activate them by using the Lime app for $1, and each additional minute costs 15 cents. That roughly comes out to $9 an hour. But Lime seems conservative and positive about the way Chicagoans have received the rollout so far. It could just be the easiest way you get to work during the summer. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust. Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:53 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. On the phone line now is Matt Moss. He's the CTA Project Director at FH Passion and joins us now to talk about the Red Line and all. Matt, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Steve. Glad to be a part of the program.
Okay, so just start by telling me where we are. I don't think the job is over, right? I know you finished phase one of the 95th Street Station. Where are we now in this project?
Correct. So in April, we finished the new South Terminal, putting the South Terminal building into service, and relocated the trains to the south area of the platform where they're currently berthed. We're in the process of building the north half, the new North Terminal at 95th Street Station, which is a major renovation of the existing terminal, which also includes widening the commuter bridges from the State and Lafayette side and tying in the widened 95th Street to the new terminal. So there'll be access to the new terminal on all four sides of the station.
And when will that be completed?
New terminal is scheduled to go into service at the end of this year.
It's been a remarkable. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Matt. But you know, it's been a remarkable, maybe overwhelming project, right? The redesign of the tracks. I know the Red Line on the south side was essentially shut down for 140 days as everything was rebuilt. A monumental task. And tell me just about moving toward completion of it all.
Sure. Well, that was a previous project done in 2013. This project.
Oh, Matt, we lost you. Are you there? Okay.
Buses and trains at the 95th Street Terminal to increase capacity and improve the customer experience.
I know that when you set out with these, there are mandates for minority participation, and then there are goals that Passion and other companies have for minority participation. And I know you're particularly proud with what you were able to accomplish there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, there's two different sets of goals. One's EEO for the workforce, and then the second goal is for contract to disadvantaged businesses. And currently, we're about 31% of the contracts on the project go to disadvantaged business enterprises. And as far as the workforce goes, the goals on the project are 19.6 minority, and Passion leads by example on this project with Passion Millhouse, with 74% of our workforce being minority, which 60% of the overall project workforce is minority.
This is going to sound like a stupid question, but explain that for me a little bit. If you're talking about your workers, would they not be your workers on the next project and the previous project, or do you hire workers specific per project?
No, we have a strong core of workers that maintain employment with FH Passion. So many of the workers that worked with us in the 2013 Dan Ryan Stations project when they shut down the Red Line are still with us today. And whether they're on a CTA project or some of our other work in aviation or schools or some of our heavy civil work, they maintain employment with FH Passion.
All right. So, Matt, as you move toward completion at 95th Street, are you looking ahead to what's next, or are you just going to put your feet up for a while?
I'll put my feet up for a few minutes. There's a lot of other projects that are on the forefront for us in the transit and transportation sectors, aviation, schools. We're really excited about what's coming down the pipeline.
Matt Moss, the CTA Project Director at FH Passion. Great to talk to you. I wish you continued success. Thanks very much, Matt.
Thank you, Steve.